This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 17th of June, 2021. Very interesting FOMC meeting, and especially the degree to which the market was surprised. I'm a bit surprised at the level of surprise, but we'll get into that, of course. As we go through this podcast, I think there's been a key message has been rolled out here, and that we are and effectively have started a Fed tightening cycle. And it's interesting to see how the market absorbs that. So if we look at Althea, you're with us today. And actually, we need to at the top of the show, we need to talk your webinar you're having later today. It's by the time many people will be listening to this, we may be already past it. But that doesn't matter. You can sign up still on webinars.saxo and about 24 hours afterwards. It'll be available on that same URL. I put the full URL in case you're confused about how to put the URL in your or the shortcut in your browser. There's a bit of trickiness there. What are you going to be talking about today? I'll tell you, it's a great timing, by the way. Compliments on that for having this webinar today.
Yes, so we're going to talk about U.S. Treasuries and the FOMC meetings. We are going to look at the corporate bond space and also the European sovereign space. So just come up, and obviously, like always, at the end of the webinar, I will open it up to questions if any of you have any.
Great. And that's on slide two, that link there, webinars.saxo. You can just pop those words in your browser if you can't be bothered with the URL. All right, we're going to delve into later. I'm going to delve into the specifics on the adjustments. I'll tell you, I know you have to hop out here in a moment, but let's go through the market reaction here. And you're bringing up a couple of things, and we had a little bit of an internal discussion here. So we saw, obviously, yields rising, a surprisingly hawkish message from the Fed, especially the dot plot shift. That caught rates quite a bit higher from twos out, short rates out to 10 years, and then 30 years not moving much. So we had a bit of back and forth on the explanation factor there. Take us through your thoughts on the U.S. yield curve here, and you've got a couple of charts here on slide three.
So, yes, I just bring it back to what we said yesterday, right? If the Federal Reserve sounded dovish, we could have expected the yields to rise, but not to break above 1.70%. And that's what happened. And actually, it looked like they stabilized around 1.59%, very close to 1.6%, and their 50 days simple moving average. So it makes me believe that if we see yields breaking above the simple moving average, they might rise up to 1.70%. However, that cap we talked about yesterday is still valid. And actually, if U.S. Treasury yields rise, that's even one more reason for foreign investors to buy U.S. Treasuries when everything is expensive elsewhere. But going back to what you said about the flattening of the yield curve.
Yeah, and by the way, when I said flattening, it's the 5 to 30 I was looking at, because if you look at the closer part of the classic 2-10s, that actually steepened slightly with its yield rise. But yes, the 30-year didn't do anything yesterday. Kind of interesting. Of course, arguably it's such a long-term rate. Why should the market react to Fed implications? But one interpretation you had was key there, and I don't want to speak for you here.
Yes, basically, I think that bond investors should focus on the fact that we are going to experience inflation in the midterm. So basically, that's bearish for all the front part of the yield curve up to 10 years, because obviously the 10 years is used as a benchmark to price, for example, corporate bonds and much other assets out there. So that part of the curve is more vulnerable than the 30 year. But what happens, what the market says, well, 30 years, we are going to have a transitionary period where we have a high inflation and we see the front part of the yield curve moving, but then it's going to arrive the time where everything normalizes and the 30 years is going to stay there.
Yeah, and arguably the Fed finally getting serious about noticing that inflation is rising and maybe doing something about it makes it more credible to look at the 30-year paper out there as the yields remaining more stable. All right, and this is a fascinating chart you have on slide four, talking about how junk, I'm really fascinated. At what point will a tighter Fed start to, and this is early days, we'll start to see widening credit spreads. We just have not seen that. And you've got some great perspective on where real yields are on some of this junky debt.
Yeah, I believe that it's the first time in history that we see a high yield US corporate real yield dropping into negative territory. And I say it might be because Bloomberg data go back 20 years, so I don't have the possibility.
I think it's a safe assumption, I'll say it, to be honest. First time. Go
ahead. But yeah, so basically what happens is that that asset we talked about that can provide a vital edge against inflation, now it doesn't. Obviously, this makes all the system much more vulnerable to interest rates in general. We obviously highlighted always investment-grade corporates because they have a much higher duration than high yield the most vulnerable. But now, if we see that real yields are falling into negative territory, then it means that also the corporate space, the junk corporate space is also becoming increasingly vulnerable. The main take here, John, I think that investors should be very cautious. I don't believe there is going to be like a massive sell-off right now into junk or massive defaults. It's very important to do bottom-up analysis and be sure to what you're holding. And just I want to add just a small thing. Corporate bonds might be toxic, but sovereigns might be even more toxic. Because what we see this morning in Europe is that everything is selling off. Mm. And we are talking about record low yields, which were not giving any kind of protection and even no kind of returns. And one of the biggest losers this morning in the European bloc is gilts, because yesterday they had basically almost no reaction for the CPI data, and today they are pricing that in as well.
All right, that's a key point there. You did flag the gilts were at risk on this. Let's go through over to you, Peter. Joking a little bit about equity traders being a little bit slow in the uptake, and I'll continue with that joke a bit here. Given the scale of the reaction we saw in fixed income, the adjustment to the rate expectations, I'm a bit surprised that we did as well as we did on the NASDAQ 100, for example, which I've put up on slide 5. You know, fairly sharp sell-off, but a lot of it was erased into the close. We're back a little bit lower overnight. Well, what's your take here on the degree to which the equity market is taking this seriously?
I like the pundit, John. I think the reason why equity is sometimes quite slow at these things is that you know, a lot of equity investors are more relates more to stories, and we have been living through a period of 14 years with, you know, growth stories being the dominant theme in equities, and that's still what we talk about in equities. Although we also know that we have all these pockets in the equity market that are sensitive to rates, and I personally think that what happened yesterday was the FOMC blinked, basically. And you both went through a lot of the details, and I think they between the lines basically said that the things are changing now, and they preparing the mindset of investors that they could actually accelerate their forecast. You also have the Norse Bank out today saying that they will not hike, of course, today, but there's an increased probability that they could hike already in September, and then three or four more hikes next year. So I think the needle is moving, and as you can see, I've put in on slide 8 this little insert from Bank of America. It's a survey they published a couple of days ago. So 7 out of 10, I think it was 72 or 73% of investors in their institutional survey there, is seeing inflation as transitory. So the Fed has convinced the market for now, but I am not buying it, and I'll show you in a few seconds why not. And then also we have this rate sensitivity. You have had the move down in the NASDAQ 100. I think it will accelerate as we progress, because I think the next 3 months, when we get more inflation data, will give us the clues whether this is transitory fast or it's really, you know, a little bit more sticky. And then I've also highlighted on slide 8, China's consumer technology basket. We flagged it yesterday with Evergrande, but I do sincerely think that there's a things brewing in China that speaks a lot of weakness. So I really think equity investors should have China on their radar. But John,
go ahead. Sorry.
No, I just wanted to say on slide 9 with the inflation, why I'm not buying why I think the Fed is missing a lot, some things on inflation. I think personally that the real underlying driver of inflation will be the green transformation, which is the biggest physical transformation of our society in more than half a century, at least. And it coincides with a 65% collapse in real terms of CapEx in the energy and materials sector, as you can see in slide 9. So you have this extraordinary demand push from the fiscal side, and you don't have a lot of CapEx going in on the supply side to expand supply of metals and energy. And I think that will end in a very bad situation, to be honest.
That's actually a really, I think on a day like today, we give it a bit of short talk, but I think it's a really key and profound point you're making there on that slide. And I'm sure we'll follow up on that in future podcasts, this lack of CapEx and what the implications are for that. Just to circle back a little bit to what actually happened at the Fed. So the main reaction, all the headlines, some of them are a little bit too simple, and they're extracting the what happened. You're seeing headlines like Fed expects to hike twice in 2023. But what you saw is a drift in the dot plots, which Fed Chair Powell clearly disdains. He hates the dot plot. I'm sure he would sooner get rid of it than continue to do it, because he has all the grains of salt around what it means. It doesn't matter. Clearly, the Fed is getting increasingly uncomfortable with what's going on, and more of the forecasters of the 18 that are forecasting are forecasting they'll get liftoff in 2023. And you can see the drift from the in June versus the March on slide 6, if you haven't seen those comparisons already. And then on slide 7, I just highlight where they shifted the PCE inflation forecast. And it's pretty modest for 2022 and 2023. They're still not yet even adjusting the core PCE 0.1% higher for 2023. And I like some of the comments out there. You can also see on slide 7, I highlighted, I did a still or a freeze frame of the Powell press conference. And his tie is a bit askew. And somebody noting in the sort of the intangibles, he seemed a bit grumpy, flustered, and not in a great mood. And clearly this might've been a pretty contentious Fed meeting. And I think there's a point to be made there. And also the forecasts speak to that as well, this dispersion that they're losing confidence in their transitory rhetoric that they've been peddling for a while now. And then finally, I just want to take you through the actual market reactions on slide 10. So for some perspective here, we talked about this with Althea. I think just look on that top right, the 10-year note. To me, she noticed some yield levels. This is just the future itself. So this is price terms. That looks like that's a killer of the rally. That technically to me suggests we should be looking for more downside, so for more upside in yields. And you can see positioning wise on the lower right on the COT report, the weekly report of positioning of non-commercial traders, that they were just getting to multi-year longs in the 10-year. So at least for the 10-year, and different spots on the curve do have different positionings, very different positionings. Still, that suggested that there was an increasing buy-in, as Peter noted with the Bank of America survey, into the team transitory. And then on the left, you have the actual sort of closer in pricing of where the Fed is going to hike. And you see the degree to which this was a surprise or something like the late 2022 Eurodollar short-term interest rate futures, which adjusted about 7 basis points lower yesterday, suggesting increasing pricing of a rate move around that time frame or even slightly earlier. And now I actually have, hey, I'm proud of myself. I can put my FX hat on a little bit more firmly. Something's actually going on here. We got a quite significant dollar reaction off the back of this, and we're hitting some key levels already. So a Eurodollar trading into 120 and even below this morning. On slide 11, you can see that it's a bit of an arbitrary level, but it's also the 200-day moving average. But these big round levels are often key. You can see how many times 120 has been tested back and forth since late last year. And as well, I would note, if we're breaking down through 119.20, it encourages the idea that we're going to complete what looks like a bit lopsided, but quite well-defined head and shoulders formations of price actions taken down there. Positioning-wise, the market's certainly not ready for this dollar strength. And just quickly running through slide 12. So obviously, yields popping like this are toxic for gold. We saw it busting through the key Fibonacci supports and 200-day moving average. That's a disappointment. So the last, not last gasp, but 1800 is the next key here, whether that gives way. There's a minor Fibonacci below that. And then the 61.8, which I've not charted on here, but you can pull that up yourself. That would be the next focus below 1800. And then finally, just to round out FX, you can see on slide 13, the usual roundup of our on the FX board and the trend evolution we're getting a strong signal now. We've got this dollar at 3.6. So it's the key here is does this move hold? And that's the key across the markets. And if it does hold, I think we could see some extension. I think positioning is not ready for more dollar strength, is not ready for the idea that the Fed has just launched a tightening cycle. And we could see some extension. But, you know, we've been faked out on so many occasions recently with one-day moves that simply don't follow through the conviction level. You know, we have to be a little bit cautious there. Note the Aussie dollar chart on slide 13, where you're also seeing a very lopsided and ugly, but fairly compelling head and shoulders formation there as well. If we break down to that 75.50 area, where the 200-day moving average is conveniently rising and converging as well. All right, Peter, you got a little bit hot under the collar this morning in the internal meeting talking about Lennar. Some really interesting perspective there on their results. And what do you think it's saying about, talk through that. Tell us about Lennar and what your takeaways were there.
Yeah, it was our earnings focus yesterday. And they reported very strong Q2. They're not following the exact calendar. The calendar as most companies. Their second quarter ended in May, and they beat on revenue and earnings, and their new orders for the quarter was 3.5 percentage points above expectation. Their Q3 outlooks, the current quarter we're in for them, was so-so versus estimates. But I think the key takeaway, I've highlighted that on slide 14 with a red marker there, is that they see fiscal year home sales growth margin expanding to 26.5% to 27% from previously 25%. And that, I think, is the kicker here, because it tells you that Lennar, it's a US home builder, can increase its gross margin despite rapidly rising input costs on lumber and copper, steel, concrete, everything basically that you need to build a house. And I think that speaks volume about the buying power that is out there in the U.S. economy among U.S. households. Because if this is the case, that you can this easily pass on rising input costs from the commodity side and even expand your profit margins, it tells you that we are not at an equilibrium yet, and that companies can either they can hike wages if workers demand that, or they can pass on rising input costs because there's so much money flowing around in the system. So I think this is more evidence that inflation could continue. And today's earnings focus is on Adobe. So Adobe is this wonder child, if you can call it that. I mean, we have a 5-year chart on slide 14. As you can see, it's just been spectacular. I'm often sitting, Peter, why did you see this? I mean, I'm an equity guy. I have done a lot of growth cases, and I never got on the Adobe bandwagon. And every time I consider it, I looked at the free cash flow yield and I looked at the price chart and I said, it's too aggressive for me, but it has just kept on going higher and higher. And I expect a beat both on the top line and the bottom line. They are carving out a natural monopoly in online content editing. It's such a powerful company, and it will be very fascinating to watch them after the night. John, can I just mention, because I think you will find this interesting, you and I often talk about Sweden and housing markets in general. So apparently in Sweden there's news out this morning in some of the big newspapers that the politicians are seriously talking about removing interest rate deductions, as we've talking about in Denmark as well. I think in the Nordic countries being inspired by New Zealand, if I'm not mistaken, that have just done so. And one of the chief economists from one of the biggest mortgage lenders in Sweden is out saying that their estimate is that the house prices in Sweden could fall 30% on an interest deduction removal. About housing market, it's just you just see signs everywhere that some policymakers, FMC is what it is, but there are signs that other regulators are getting nervous about these prices hiking. And John, can I just say on the table you put in on slide 7, isn't it crazy to think that the previous FOMC, in the March projection, you had the core PCE inflation for this year 2.2, and then fast forward only a few months, it's suddenly 3%. It just tells you that the Fed's models, their econometric models right now, cannot model what the hell is going on. So I mean, I have zero trust in their 2022 forecast. I think actually it's a joke. To be honest,
it's actually a very good point, and you see that they do bother to let it spill into the 2022 by 0.1%. Yeah. But I won't tell you what you can do with the Fed forecast once you've printed them out on some soft tissue paper. But
go ahead.
Yeah, it's really good. It really is really the key question here, transitory or not. And you can see where the market is leaning. So we know where the surprise side is as we march forward in the coming months. So that's going to be really key to watch. The team transitory will note things like oil price rises are slowing down, although they're actually quite steep. Lumber is reversed a lot, etc. But there are other aspects of what's going on here, especially supply constraints driving things. It's a really key phase of the next 3 months between here and let's call it September, October timeframe. And very good point on Sweden and the macroprudential side of all of this. I mean, I think it's way, way too late to coming around to this conclusion on the risks from housing. I mean, especially these Nordic economies, or especially Sweden and Denmark. And Denmark doesn't really have its own currency. It does, but it's mostly locked to the euro. And in Sweden, you have something like 105-year mortgages. And here you're talking about 30-year interest-only mortgages. Crazy stuff. And I think it's huge macro risks for these countries when they do finally have to crack down, you know, way too late in the game. Let's go through the somewhat interesting macro calendar for today. We have the S&B out, Switzerland S&B policy rate decision. They're not going to move anything. They're at -0.75%. They've seen some recent strength. Interesting to see if they try to send any signals about whether they're going to do anything about that. I think it helps. It will help the Swiss franc a little bit lower if we see yields continue to rise here. I think the Swiss franc strength doesn't make sense in that light. You have gold collapsing and if the U.S. equity starts to turn around a bit more as well. That sort of barbell is basically what the S&B is holding in its reserves. Not good there. You talked a bit about the Norges Bank, Peter. I think they're on track for, you know, forecasting a rate hike. Their latest CPI was way lower than expected, but I'm not sure how much that plays into what they're seeing here. And then Turkey. If Turkey signals that they want to cut rates, especially today in this environment post FOMC. Shield your eyes. I've been kind of interested in Turkey from a value proposition, but we really have to get the right message from the central bank. They're going to be patient here and not try to signal rate cuts too soon. And then a couple of interesting U.S. data points that we're looking at, the weekly jobless claims, etc. We do have a Bank of Japan meeting overnight. That was not on the calendar until today. Apologies for that, but not expecting much there. Attention for Japanese yen traders, the rising yields, generally yen negative. We have to remember, though, that real Japanese yields are quite stable. And I think the yen's been unfairly punished on this whole yield rise phenomenon. While I think if EM becomes a little bit even more unglued here, and we see quite a steep correction there, that might be supporting yen in some of the crosses, because I think a lot of Japanese investors like the EM carry trade, and that would see some of that unwinding. We'll see. It's been a long one today. There's lots to sift through. Really, the key here is whether this reaction sticks and deepens. We do think this is the beginning of a Fed tightening cycle, and the market is being a little bit slow to absorb this. But we'll see where things stand tomorrow, of course, with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.